tails and shaking his head. You know who used to fly one of these? Lando Calrissian. But even his didn't measure up to this. Roa clapped Han on the shoulder and steered him toward the main forward hold, where a burnished silver protocol droid intercepted them.
Pardon me, Master Roa, but a stranger is approaching the ship.
A console screen displayed video of a slight, brown-haired, blue-eyed teenager.
You recognize him?
Roa asked Han. Han's eyes narrowed.
My youngest son.
Anakin was already at the foot of the Happy Daggers ramp by the time Han appeared.
Hey, Dad, he said carefully.
Han stormed down the ramp and planted his hands on his hips.
How'd you track me down?
Anakin took a step back.
Mom said you were traveling with someone named Roa and that you weren't taking the Falcon.
Wasn't that hard to locate the right docking bay? Han's expression hardened.
I hope she didn't send you here to find out where I'm going, because it's like I told her, I don't know yet.
Anakin frowned.
She didn't send me. I came on my own.
Oh,
Han said awkwardly.
So,
I have something for you.
Anakin unclipped a small leather case from his belt.
Consider it a going-away present.
Han looked quizzically at the lightweight cylinder he'd been handed.
I give up, he said at last. What is it?
A survival tool.
Brightening slightly, Anakin took back the device and ran through the procedures for accessing a score of miniature utensils, including a macrofuser and a miniature transpirator. For a moment, Han didn't know what to say.
Look, kid, it's a clever piece of hardware, but I don't have any hiking trips planned for the near future.
Chewie made it for me, Anakin said evenly. I want you to have it.
Han started to protest, but thought better of it. The tool was a peace offering. He forced a smile and turned the tool about in his hands.
Who knows? Maybe it'll come in handy. Thanks, kid.
They embraced, stiffly and briefly. Han started for the Happy Dagger, but stopped halfway up the ramp and swung back to Anakin.
It's gonna be all right, you know.
Anakin stared at him, blinking back tears.
What is? The war? My feeling terrible about Chewie? Or taking off without letting anyone know where you're going?
Through the Happy Dagger's wraparound cockpit viewport, Han gazed queasily at the mottled indifference of hyperspace. Beside him, Roa stirred, yawned loudly, and stretched his arms over his head. He blinked and swiveled to the droid at the navicomputer.
Are we nearly there?
The ship will shortly revert to real space, Master Roa.
Roa grinned at Han.
Like old times, isn't it? You and me on a run.
So, just where are we going, Roa? Roa tapped his forefinger on a star chart he called up on a display screen.
Ord Mantell.
Han's mouth fell open a bit. Then he threw his head back and launched an explosive laugh at the ceiling. Roa regarded him quizzically.
Worried about running into someone from your past?
Someone from the here and now, Han muttered.
My wife.
Ord Mantell was still the same undistinguished sphere Han remembered from previous visits, which had been many over the years, some intentional, more by misadventure. But something new had been added since Han's last visit. A small space station of outmoded ring design, pieced together from salvaged and hut-supplied parts by a consortium of mid-rim engineering companies. The Jubilee Wheel, Roa called it. First down the ramp, while Roa sought to lock down procedures, Han was confronted by a group of five aliens of a species he had never encountered.
You need perhaps someone to watch over your ship? Their spokesman asked.
Han eyed the alien up and down.
I need perhaps someone to watch over you.
The alien, clearly a male, took a moment to catch on, then laughed loudly, a hearty basso laugh that almost made Han smile. A head shorter than Han, he was a biped with muscular legs and a slender yet useful-looking tail. Those parts of him left unconcealed by a colorful vest and culottes were covered with short, smoke-colored fuzz, save for the backs of his forearms and tail. A soft, snow-white mustache drooped past his pointed chin, and a fright wig of matching white hair. His front-facing eyes were large and bright. His nose was a chitinous beak that curved down over a thin-lipped mouth and was perforated like a musical instrument.
All right," the mouthpiece was saying. "You perhaps prefer to have someone clean and detail the ship?"
Han put his hands on his hips and laughed. He was still sniggering when Roa came down the ramp.
"Roa, you want to hire this bunch to sonic the carpets and clean the freshers?"
Roa regarded the aliens with keen interest.
"That's what the droids are for," he told the spokesman.
"Then we'll watch over the ship. Lots of thieves about."
"I do appreciate the offer," Roa said congenially. "But no thanks. Some other time, perhaps."
The aliens exchanged words in their melodic native language, nodded to Han and Roa, and moved off toward the neighboring ship in the bay.
"It's like somebody tossed a Manka cat and a Woolamander into a blender,"
Han said, watching the aliens.
"Rin," Roa said, identifying the species. "I used to run into them occasionally on out-of-the-way worlds in the Corpsec. Essien, Nin, Mattress 6. They're nomads, that is, when they're not being hunted or enslaved, chased from one place to another. They've a reputation for thievery and confidence games, but I've never had a problem with them. And I'll tell you, Han, they perform the most exhilarating music I've ever heard. Music you can't help but dance to."
Han gave them another look. "Where's their homeworld?" Roa shook his head.
"No one's ever been able to tell me."
Han laughed through his nose.
"Just when you think you've seen it all."
They headed for immigration and customs, where long lines of mixed species were undergoing document checks and security scans. Han showed his documents, which identified him as Roki Lamu, a freelance laser welder.
"We're looking for a watering hole. The bet's off,"
Roa said to the customs agent, who was rifling through their bags.
"You know how to get there?" "Assuming you two have normal spectrum vision, red route to the yellow tram to white too, then all the way down the shaft. You can't miss it."
A short time later, Han and Roa sipped geysers in the Bets Off, a crowded and somewhat elegant tap caf with a back room devoted to sabacc and other games of chance.
"Time I started making some inquiries," Roa announced when he'd finished his drink.
He stood up and squared his shoulders.
"I won't be long."
Han watched him move off in the direction of the circular bar, then watched him return only moments later with the rangy, red-haired spacer.
"Roki Lamu, meet Fasgo,"
Roa said as the man extended his hand to Han.
"Just make sure to count your fingers when you're done shaking."
Fasgo grinned broadly, showing stained teeth, and took a long swallow of ale.
"Fasgo was one of my best tax and tariff boys," Roa continued. "Just ask him and he'll tell you. And since he left my employ, he's had occasion to work with Rek Desh."
Han watched Fasgo's smile collapse.
"Any idea where Rek can be found?" Roa asked pleasantly.
Fasgo swallowed hard.
"Look, Roa, Roki and I know all about Rek's new employers,"
Roa cut him off,
"so there's no need to feed us a tale."
Fasgo licked his lips and forced a short laugh.
"You know Rek, Roa, he follows the credits."
Han put his elbows on the table. "If the pay's all that good, how come you're not still with him?"
Not my style," Fasgo said, shaking his head. "I'm no traitor."
Han and Roa glanced at each other.
"So, what about Rek?"
Roa said. Fasgo shook his head once more.
I don't know where he is now."
Gauging the look in Han's eyes, he added,
"I'm being straight with you guys. I don't know."
He glanced around and leaned forward conspiratorially.
"There is someone on station who could probably tell you. He runs things around here, the underground things. They call him Boss B." "And just where do we find this Boss B?"
Roa said. Fasgo made his voice a whisper.
"Ask around for him, and he'll find you."
As the spacer was about to rise, Han laid a restraining hand on his shoulder.
Who's running Rex Enterprise? Who's his control? The color drained from Fasgo's face.
You don't want to meet them, Loki. They're nasty as they come, and then some.
Give me a name?
I never learned any names, honest.
Fasgo swallowed whatever else he was about to say and riveted his gaze on something over Han's shoulder. Han twisted around to see three Trandoshans moving toward the table, armed with Mersan and Blastech blasters and wearing knee-length climate-controlled coveralls, while two came to a halt on either side of his chair, the largest of the Saurian trio, older by the look of his graying skin, circled the table twice, never taking his black-pupiled red eyes from Han. Eventually, he took up a position directly across from him.
"Now you look very familiar,"
he rasped. His long tongue emerged from a lipless mouth and wriggled in the air for a moment.
"And you taste even more familiar."
Han forced himself to relax. While the Trandoshan had clearly recognized him, Han wasn't sure if he and the alien had ever crossed paths. Native to a world in the same star system as Kashyyyk, the brackish-smelling Trandoshans had been instrumental in persuading the Empire to enslave the Wookiees, and had often worked as slavers themselves. "Last time I saw a tongue like that, it was hanging in a meat market collecting stink flies," Han said. The Trandoshan's death trap of a mouth approximated a baleful smile, and he planted his triple-clawed hands on the table.
"Now, the human you resemble has since become a very important person. But when I knew him, he was just a second-rate smuggler running spies for Jabba the Hutt, and anyone else witness enough to employ him."
"Bosk?" Han wondered. "Could it possibly be..."
"Among other dishonorable acts, this piece of human filth once interfered with a legitimate slaver operation on Gandolo 4.
Roa shifted in his seat and spoke up.
"What's past is past, big guy. Or is it that you're so short on hunter's points you got to disturb a couple of old friends sharing drinks?"
The Trandoshan glowered at Roa, then Han.
"I don't know this, fat one, but I do know you, Han Solo."
"Solo?"
Fasgo said in astonishment. Han held the Trandoshan's gaze. It had to be Bosk.
"I heard you lost the Wookiee, Solo. Rumor has it you let a moon come crashing down on him. Which is just what I'd do if I had a Wookiee following me around. But what's one flea-bitten Wookiee or another?"
he continued with elaborate casualness.
"Why not just go out and get yourself another one?"
Han threw the punch that started it all. Removed from the frenzied tempo of lofty Coruscant, deep in a vertical slice of the city world known colloquially as the Abyss, 8 people of mixed species sat expectantly at a long table in a windowless and otherwise secure chamber. The chamber resided at the heart of the entombed headquarters of the New Republic's Intelligence Division. Separate conversations came to an abrupt halt when an entry-granted tone sounded from the door and Director Diff Scour stamped into the room, a sheaf of Durasheet documents and optical prints under one arm.
"Thank you all for gathering on such short notice. I have some important and time-sensitive information to share with you regarding the Yuuzhong Vong defectors who were picked up by Exodo 2.
Seated around the long table were 6 members of the Security Council. The Amalan Senator Perolo Miatamia, Senator Kral Pradget representing Idatha, and Senators Grone Marab of Mon Calamari, Tolik Yar of Ulidi, Abel Bogan of Raltir, and Vicky Shesh of Kuat. Also present was Luke Skywalker and his saturnine teenage nephew Anakin Solo.
"Let's come to the point, shall we? Where are the defectors now?"
Senator Kral Pradget asked from the chair closest to Scour. Never one to mince words, Pradget had once sought to remove Leia Solo from office.
"Major Showalter has relocated the defectors to Merkur for safekeeping until we decide just what to do with them."
"Were you able to gain any further insight into what compelled the enemy to invade the Outer Rim to begin with?" Miatamia asked.
We have not yet had time to interview the defectors thoroughly, but so far the one called Elan has reiterated much of what we already know about the motives of the Yuuzhang Vong. At the behest of their gods, they are determined to cleanse our galaxy and or convert us to their religion.
Scar took a breath.
What I've come to tell you, however, is that Elan has provided us with intelligence of a highly sensitive and potentially invaluable nature. Should it bear out, I would like to seek authorization to relocate the defectors here to Coruscant. The plan we've worked out takes advantage of the current chaos in the Mid-Rim. By effectively losing Elan and her companion, the one called Verger, among the crowds of displaced people, and jumping them to Coruscant via a circuitous route through Bilbringi, Jagatou, and Chandrila.
Why are these two so eager to defect? Senator Shesh asked.
Elan hinted at dissension among the Yuuzhang Vong ranks, some disagreement as to the legitimacy of the invasion. Seemingly, she wants to help us.
In return for what?
Scour narrowed his eyes.
Elan does have one request.
He looked pointedly at Luke Skywalker.
She wishes to meet with the Jedi Knights. She said it has to do with some sort of illness the Yuuzhang Vong introduced on several worlds in advance of the arrival of their world ships. She refused to elaborate. She said the Jedi would understand.
Skywalker and his nephew traded astonished glances. Nothing more? The elder Jedi said, clearly intrigued.
Nothing more.
The Jedi must discuss this matter, Luke Skywalker said. Personally, though, I can say that I'm eager to meet with the priestess. Everyone fell silent for a moment. Then Shesh spoke up once more.
Director Scar, what is the nature of the intelligence Elan furnished?
The Yuuzhang Vong's next target, Ord Mantell.
Though Verger might have been born of the Yuuzhang Vong's masterful talent for genetic manipulation, the exotic creature had, in fact, been transported to the main fleet 2 generations earlier, by one of the first teams to reconnoiter the galaxy that had produced the Jedi. The scouting party had returned dozens of specimens to the world ships, including humans, verpine, tals, and others. After extensive experiments, some had expired and others had been sacrificed, but a few had been awarded as pets to children of select elite, such as Elan, youngest daughter of an advisor to Supreme Overlord Shimra. Verger's uniqueness was thought by some to be sacred. Through the long years of negotiating the intergalactic void, through the long years of Elan's rigorous training in the Deception Sect, Verger had been her constant companion, confidant, friend, even tutor.
"Does it cheer you to be back among your own kind?"
Elan asked carefully.
"Hardly my own kind, mistress."
"Among your home species, then?" Verger's large eyes smiled.
"We Fush were never at home among them. We were too few in number. Humankind had filled all the evolutionary gaps, bringing about the extinction of species like mine."
"But you could reveal the truth to Showalter and escape back to your own realm."
Verger reached for Elan's patterned hand and caressed it.
"I am your familiar. Were it not for you, I would have been sacrificed or disposed of. We are linked until one of us dies."
Elan exhaled with intent.
"Despite what you say or what you choose to reveal, you know these species better than anyone else, even Nomanor."
Verger shook her head.
"The Executor has made it his mission to study them, to know them better than they know themselves. We, Fosh, were more devoted to concealing ourselves."
"From what little you know, then, do you believe they will provide me with an opportunity to meet with the Jedi?"
"It is too soon to tell, mistress. Should Commander Talar deem it wise to furnish the New Republic with a victory to support the data you provided, you may yet meet with them."
Elan considered it in silence.
"Did you know of the Jedi in your time here?"
"As I say, the Fosh moved discreetly, but of course we knew of the Jedi. They were manifold. I was surprised to learn that they are now few."
She paused briefly. I thank you for revealing nothing of my past to Harar, mistress.
Alan merely smiled. Did you ever witness the Jedi employ the Force?
The Jedi consider the Force to be all around us, permeating all living things. So in that regard, I'm certain I witnessed the Force at work.
Perhaps it would benefit the Yuuzhong Vong to learn how to use it. Vergaer took a moment to respond.
Indeed, it might befit the Yuuzhong Vong to become aware of the Force, but it is not for all to employ.
Such power should be reserved for those with the strength to heft the sword and the wisdom to know when to wield it.
Han leaned his right shoulder against the pitted bars of the cramped jail cell and gently massaged the swollen knuckle of his left ring finger.
"Good fight," he said. "I really enjoyed it."
Fazgo and Roa were seated on the squalid floor, backs against an equally fouled wall, the former with a comically swollen right ear, the latter looking remarkably unscathed.
"Some mess," Roa said around a grin.
Fazgo gently fingered the tip of his nose.
"Heel's broken," he muttered.
A gate slid open down the corridor, and in short order a burly security guard in a gray uniform strode into view.
"All right, old-timers," the guard announced churlishly. "You're free to go."
Han, Roa, and Fazgo exchanged mystified glances.
"I thought we couldn't post bail until the arraignment," Roa said.
"You're not being arraigned," the guard said. "You must have some friends in high places."
The guard led them out of the confinement zone, returned their belongings, and pointed them to the exit. No sooner had they stepped into the passageway than an Aqualish approached them.
"Roa, Fazgo, Rokilamu,"
the alien began in somewhat garbled basic, courtesy of his inward-turned tusks.
"My employer requests the pleasure of your company."
"Boss B,"
Roa reminded Han quietly.
"The information broker."
Fazgo gulped.
"Did we ask around?" Han asked theatrically. "I don't recall us asking around."
The Aqualish, a Quara, showed the palms of fingered hands.
"Come now, gentlemen. Surely you can spare a few moments for the person who arranged for your release."
The sprung trio traded surprised glances.
"Well, in that case," Han said, "lead on."
The swank hatchway to Boss B's lair was flanked by pug-nosed and prognathous Gamorrean sentinels, and the plush anteroom was filled with an assortment of toadies, sycophants, and camp followers. The Aqualish showed Han and the others to overstuffed armchairs in the main room and offered them drinks. Han remained standing.
"Save the geysers for the bets off,"
a disembodied baritone voice suggested.
"Have a tumbler of Wyron's Reserve instead."
"Now that I won't turn down," Fazgo said, beaming.
"Make it two,"
Roa told the Aqualish.
"Three," Han said hesitantly, trying to discern the source of the resonant voice.
"Your reputation precedes you, gentlemen,"
the voice said. Fazgo ran the back of his hand over his mouth.
"If you mean the damage to the bets off, the Trandoshans were responsible for most of it." "You can blame me for that,"
Boss B interrupted.
"I put them up to it."
"You? Why?" Han demanded.
"How else could I have ensured that you would accept my hospitality, except by arranging for you to be released from incarceration?"
"I don't get it," Han said. Boss B laughed.
"I am personally informed when individuals of honorable or disreputable distinction arrive on the Jubilee Wheel. Such was the case with you, Roa. But imagine my surprise when, after a bit of machine-assisted scrutiny, I discovered your traveling partner to be none other than Han Solo."
Han drained his glass in one gulp and set it down roughly. "You planning to show yourself, or are we going to have to play Name That Voice?" Not 3 meters in front of Han, a shroud field dissipated, revealing what might have been the outcome of a hot and humid mating. Though the lavender-hued humanoid managed to get around on 2 tree-trunk-thick legs, possibly with the assistance of repulsor coil implants, he had the girth of a young hut and a head too large to fit through an ordinary hatchway.
Disheveled, slate-colored hair crowned his head like an abandoned avian's nest, and enormous pink ears flapped against his skull like wings. In the reddish-stained fingers of one huge hand, he held a fat jackfruit cigar. Han nearly fell out of his chair.
Big Bungie?
The giant humanoid guffawed in merriment.
Boss Bungie, Han!
Roa smiled broadly. Fasgo swallowed hard but said nothing. Han frowned.
You're not still sore about my strafing your pressure dome on that asteroid?
Not at all,
Bungie said.
I deserved it for trying to get the better of you on those jackroot runs to Gorik.
You took the words right out of my mouth, Han laughed.
The fact is, I owe you a huge debt of gratitude for what you accomplished on Tatooine.
Bungie gestured broadly.
You could say that much of this station owes to your efforts.
Han jabbed himself in the chest. What I did on Tatooine? Bungie puffed on his cigar and grinned.
To be more precise, what your wife did. You see, Han, I had attempted to relocate my business enterprise to Tatooine, only to be run off by Jabba. Not content to have done that, the Hutt all but crippled my cash flow for the next few years. His death, however, presented me with an opportunity to rebuild my power base. A few shrewd deals made during the Thrawn years, and I was back on my feet. Then, just a year ago, I had the wheel assembled in a nearby system and towed here to Ord Mantell.
This is yours? Han said.
Most of it. Borg the Hutt has a small stake in it. Now, if the New Republic would only do something about the Yuuzhan Vong...
Han's smile straightened. Some of us are trying to do just that, Bungie.
Is that what has brought you here, under a false identity, no less?
Roa said, Han and I are trying to hunt down a former associate. Bungie inclined his head in interest.
Which former associate?
His name's Rek Desh. Bungie fell silent for a long moment. He inhaled on the cigar and launched a jumbo smoke ring toward the ceiling.
If I were you, Han, I wouldn't be so quick to catch up with Rek Desh.
You wouldn't happen to know where Rek is currently? Asked Roa, ignoring Bungie's warning.
At last report, the Peace Brigade was operating in Hutt space, Bungie said, much to Borga's dismay. If you'd like, I could make a few inquiries.
Han showed him a skeptical look. Why would you be willing to do that for us? Bungie shrugged.
As I say, I owe you. If that isn't reason enough, then I'm doing it for the Wook. It near broke my heart to hear that he had died. I'd have given anything to have had a partner like Chewbacca.
Before Han could respond, sirens began to blare and the illumination in Bungie's well-appointed enclave flickered. Without warning, the Jubilee wheel shuddered as if it had been poked by the finger of a colossal hand. One of Bungie's henchmen rushed to a nearby terminal and called up data on a display screen.
Yuuzhan Vong attack!
He blurted. Humans and others leapt to their feet, running every which way for exits, shelter. Bungie and the more important members of his coterie were already disappearing through a gaping hatchway in the cabin's rear wall. Han threw his pack over his shoulder and stumbled forward, only to have the hatch lock solidly as he reached it.
To the Happy Dagger, Roa said from the anteroom. I've no intention of being on this wheel when the Yuuzhan Vong decide to roll it downhill.
Reaching a central passageway, they were immediately swept up in a mixed-species mob that was fighting its way toward the launch bays. All at once, the station sustained a strike of unprecedented force. Ear-splitting, nerve-grating sounds of rending alloy filled the corridor as a huge arc of exterior bulkhead was simply ripped away. And toward that dark breach, the crowd was inexorably pulled. Screams overwhelmed the metallic stridency. Waging a losing battle, people clawed at walls, deck-plating in one another in an effort to keep from being sucked into the maw. Pressed to the inner wall of the curve, Han, Fasgo, and Roa managed to grab hold of the twisted remains of a hand railing. But even as they struggled to secure themselves, bodies lifted parallel to the deck by the vacuuming force, the railing tore away from the bulkhead. An airborne MSE-6 droid caught Fasgo square in the head and carried him shrieking into the current. Han watched him sail toward the breach, arms outstretched and flailing as if plummeting from a great height. Han tore his gaze away before Fazgul vanished.
"Looks like we took a wrong turn!"
Han shouted to Roa, who was just out of reach to his left. Roa twisted his head around.
"Too bad the rejuvenation text didn't equip me with the strength of a young man in addition to the good looks."
"Hang on, Roa."
"How I wish I could, but I think I hear Luel calling me."
"Don't say that. Just hang on till I get there."
"I can't, Han. I'm sorry. I just don't have it in me."
Roa's face betrayed the struggle.
"Take care, old friend. Finish our business with Wreck."
Smiling resignedly, he submitted to the flow.
"Roa, no!"
Han screamed, daring to extend one arm and nearly allowing himself to be carried away. Han shut his eyes, hung his head for a moment, then screamed in anger until his throat hurt. When his breath returned, he secured the travel pack to his back and began to pick his way toward a rib left exposed by flayed bulkhead sheets. He had no sooner wrapped his arms around the structural member when someone hurtled past his face a hair's breadth away and latched desperately onto his outstretched legs. Han's backbone stretched like a rubber band and groaned in protest. When the shock abated, he peered down the length of himself and saw that his unsolicited hanger-on was a male Wren, arms clutched around Han's knees and legs, thrashing. This one was sporting a soft, brimless cap of bright red and blue squares worn at a rakish angle.
"Mind if I rest here a moment?"
the alien asked in melodic basic.
"If I'm too heavy, I'll toss the cap."
Han scowled at him.
"As long as your head's in it."
"So you'd rather I let go?"
"If you make sure to close the door on your way out."
"That isn't vacuum out there,"
the Wren said, nodding toward the breach.
"There's a mouth on the other side of that hole."
"A mouth?"
"The mouth of a Yuuzhang Vong dread weapon, like a huge serpent for taking captives."
Han instantly saw the logic of it. The people, droids, and objects zipping past him weren't victims of compromised gravity. They were effectively being inhaled by something that had taken a giant-sized bite out of the wheel's rim.
"So, how do we gag that thing?"
Han said. The Wren shook his head, long mustachios whipping about.
"I don't think we can, but there might be a way to stifle it."
Han followed the Wren's gaze to a seam in the corridor ceiling between them and the maw.
"A blast shield!"
The problem was that the mushroom-shaped button that could lower the shield was located on the corridor wall, some 5 meters closer to the breach.
"There's a support strut just beyond me,"
the Wren said.
"If I release my grip on you, I may be able to grab hold of it. But I still won't be able to reach the shield activation button."
"Finish your thought,"
Han said, trying to ignore a sinking feeling.
"Then you'll have to let go and catch hold of me. That should put you close enough to tap the button with your foot."
"Assuming I manage to catch hold of you,"
the Wren snickered.
"Assuming also that I manage to catch hold of the strut. If I miss, well, I suppose it's a matter of how long you think you can hold on."
Han regarded him quizzically for a moment, then nodded grimly.
"You've got yourself a deal. Good luck."
The velvet-coated Wren eased himself down Han's legs until he was dangling from Han's ankles, then disengaged. Han heard rather than saw him make harsh contact with the strut.
"You all right?"
he called.
"Your turn,"
the Wren yelled shortly. Han took a steadying breath. Carefully unwrapping himself from the alloy rib, he let fly. The current was even stronger than he expected. In a split second, he was rushing past the Wren. But when he reached out wildly to arrest his motion, he hugged only air. He was already imagining himself inside the Yuuzhang Vong dread weapon when something wrapped itself around his chest under his arms, yanking him to a halt. It took Han a moment to grasp that the Wren had snagged him with his tail.
"Kick the button! Kick the button!"
the alien squealed in a pained voice.
"Or plan on taking part of me with you into that creature!"
Han looked to his right and spied the mushroom button almost within reach of his right foot.
"Swing me to the right!"
he yelled. The Wren's muscular tail spasmed just enough to set Han swaying and bring him within reach of the corridor wall. He extended his foot and caught the button with the toe of his boot. The blast shield dropped rapidly, hitting the groove deck with a loud and reassuring thud. At once, Han, the Rin, and everyone left in the corridor followed suit, falling to the floor like stones. While Han was fighting to regain his wind, the Rin sprang to his feet and tugged his cap down on his forehead.
"Now what?"
he asked. Han stood up, clapping grit from his hands.
"We get off this station before that thing decides it's still hungry. The launch bays are this way,"
the two of them said at the same time, although rushing off in opposite directions.
"Trust me,"
the Rin said before Han could speak. Han stared at him stonily, then waved him on and fell in behind. Powerful spasms continued to rock the wheel, throwing them from side to side. Han stopped to collect a pair of crying Bim children who had become separated from their families. Other children and adults began to attach themselves to Han and the Rin, if for no other reason than the two at least appeared to know where they were going.
"You'd better be right,"
Han warned as he ran.
"Don't worry,"
the Rin called over his shoulder.
"I'm too young to die."
"Yeah, and I'm too well known."
Ahead, the corridor swept broadly to the right, and Han began to recognize where he was. The docking bays were only a short distance away.
"Can you pilot the ship?"
the Rin asked breathlessly. Han grinned smugly.
"Don't worry."
The Rin skidded to a halt at the docking bay door and tapped the entry switch. The hatch raised, and the crowd surged forward, almost flattening Han in the process.
"I'm certain they'll all thank you later on,"
the Rin said as he brushed past. Waiting in the docking bay was a bullet-shaped civilian shuttle, just spacious enough to accommodate everyone. Han hurried for the cockpit, while the Rin supervised the boarding. Han maneuvered the shuttle in a 180-degree turn into the launch bay and blasted through the doors. Local space was thick with fighters and lighted by flashes of explosive color. A band of coral skippers raced past, pursued X-wings and TIE interceptors, lasers firing steadily. Han twisted the shuttle to port, hugging the curve of the wheel's outer rim, ascending and descending as necessary to avoid debris. A quarter of the way around the wheel, an enormous enemy warship came into view. Retracting into an orifice in the bow was a colossal serpentine creature.
"That's gotta be the thing that swallowed Ro and Fazgo,"
Han growled to the Rin. Firewalling the shuttle's throttle, Han accelerated straight for the creature, oblivious to his co-pilot's wide-eyed distress.
"What are you doing?"
the Rin screamed. Han gestured with his stubble chin out the viewport.
"My friends are imprisoned in that thing."
The Rin's voice abandoned him momentarily. Then he exclaimed,
"You can't just break them out. We're unarmed."
Han suddenly grasped that he wasn't aboard the Falcon, and he cursed to himself. If he had been alone, he might have risked attacking the dread weapon anyway. But the shuttle's passenger compartment was filled with scores of innocents. It also dawned on Han that he was in the same position Anakin had found himself in on Cernpadal, forced to choose between the lives of a shipload of strangers and the life of one friend. The realization pierced Han's heart like a vibroblade, and he swore to himself that if he made it home in one piece, he would put things right with his estranged son.
"Plot us a course for Ord Mantell."
Out of the corner of his eye, he saw the Rin nodding approvingly. Han held the shuttle to an unswerving course until they were some distance from the wheel, then banked through a long descending curve. The area was free of coral skippers, and the Yuuzhan Vong warship was beginning to move off. Moving with cocky assurance, Rek Desh, black-haired, streamlined, and newly tattooed, stepped into the Nebula Orchid and took in the room at a glance. Patrons in the popular Kuat City eatery included the usual boisterous mix of human and non-human technicians, engineers, and shipfitters, many on surface leave from Kuat Drive Yard's orbital starship construction facilities, along with a dozen or so civilians. Among the latter were three veiled Telbans in heavy purple and red robes and tall cylindrical hats, mates in training for the spoiled daughters of the Kuati elite. Rek crossed the room and folded himself into booth 6. Booth 5 was also empty, but in 7 sat a lone Telban, whose facial veil covered all but his eyes. Rek settled back against the padded seat to wait for his mystery contact to turn up. He was about to hail a waiter when the Telban, sitting back to back with him, spoke up. "Don't turn around, Rek," the Kuati ordered in the neutered tone typical of a high-priced voice scrambler. Rek leaned his head back, almost touching the Telvans.
"You'd better have something worthwhile,"
he hissed. "I know a way to put you in good stead with your bosses."
"Yeah? What makes you think I'm not in good standing?"
"You showed up here. I wasn't sure where you stood when I comlinked you, but I know now. You're ambitious and you're intrigued." Rek snorted.
"I'll let you know when I hear the rest of what you have to say."
"The New Republic has a Yuzhong Vong defector in custody. She's an elite, a priestess of some sort. She's traveling with a mascot. The two are being transferred to Coruscant for safekeeping. I know the route they're taking." Rek checked an impulse to turn around.
"I'm not sure I follow you."
"Think about it. Whoever returns the defector to the fold will be doing the Yuzhong Vong a tremendous favor."
"Now I get it. I make everyone happy and maybe earn myself a reward. But what's your payoff in this?"
"The New Republic is going to lose this war, and there's nothing to be gained by being on the losing side. Play this right, Rek, and both of us will come out winners." Rek took a slow breath.
"All right," he said. "I'm willing to give this a shot."
"You won't be sorry." The Telvan paused briefly. "The defector and her companion are traveling to Coruscant by way of Bilbringi, aboard an old starliner called Queen of Empire. But I suggest you grab them before they reach Bilbringi."
"You leave that to me," Rek said.
Warbling sirens signaled an all-clear as C-3PO hurried past the open-air launch pads of Ord Mantell's primary spaceport. Defense shields had protected the city from aerial bombardment.
"Thank the Maker,"
C-3PO muttered as he walked.
"Thank the Maker."
Secreted with her vigilant Nogri bodyguard, Mistress Leia had tasked C-3PO with assuring that their spacecraft hadn't suffered damage during the Yuzhong Vong attack, and indeed that had proved to be the case. Then, quite unexpectedly, his photoreceptors zeroed in on Master Solo, conversing with a Rin of all species. As C-3PO hastened toward them, he couldn't help but note that Master Han and the Rin looked somewhat the worse for wear. And in fact, Master Solo and the Rin weren't so much conversing as arguing.
"See you around,"
the Rin was concluding as C-3PO neared.
"Not if I can help it, partner,"
Han said in a manner that held little sympathy.
"Master Solo,"
C-3PO called, waving an arm over his head.
"Master Solo."
Han turned and saw him, then snorted a laugh, not at all as surprised as C-3PO might have expected him to be.
"Master Solo, you're injured,"
C-3PO exclaimed on seeing dried blood on his hands and face.
"Could have been a lot worse,"
Han replied, with his usual penchant for understatement.
"Where's Leia, 3PO?
"Why, she's at the Hotel Grand as we speak, sir."
Han thought for a minute, eyes narrowing as he glanced at C-3PO.
"I don't suppose there's any chance of your not mentioning you ran into me."
C-3PO inclined his head in perplexity.
"No, I suppose not,"
Han said, answering for himself. He blew out his breath.
"In that case, I guess you'd better lead me to her."
"I still can't believe you're here,"
Leia said, as she applied a transdermal Bacta patch to a nasty abrasion above Han's right eyebrow. Han was seated at the vanity in Leia's elegant hotel room, with Leia leaning over him and C-3PO standing silently in the background.
"Where's your friend Roa?"
Han spoke through gritted teeth.
"That's an excellent question, Leia. He got sucked into some sort of Yuzhong Vong snake ship that latched onto the Jubilee wheel."
Leia placed her hands on his shoulders.
"Oh, Han, no."
"Maybe he's only been captured," Han vented. "But that's even worse."
"Did you two accomplish what you set out to do?"
Leia asked guardedly. Han's eyes found hers in the vanity mirror.
"The enemy interrupted us."
"I'm sorry to hear that."
Leia averted her gaze and returned to smoothing the Bacta patch.
What will you do now?
Abruptly, Han stood up and paced away from the vanity.
I don't know. Look for him, I guess.
Leia regarded him with disbelief.
Look for him? How do you intend to do that?
Han shook his head.
I don't know yet.
He glanced at Leia and scowled.
What do you expect me to do? Pretend it never happened?
Of course not. I only meant...
Han waved his hand at her.
Ah, how could I expect you to understand?
It's reckless of you to be roaming about out there.
I'm not exactly roaming about, Leia.
Then tell me what you're doing.
Han started to say something, but stopped himself, and began again.
I knew it would be a mistake to come here, he mumbled.
Leia stepped back in genuine dismay. She made no attempt to restrain him as he snatched his travel pack from the floor and let himself out. But no sooner did the door seal than she sank to the bed as if stunned.
Well, that certainly wasn't in the plans, she said flatly to C-3PO.
The plans, mistress?
She looked at him askance.
It's an expression, 3PO. I didn't really have any plans.
C-3PO appeared to slouch. Leia smiled in spite of herself.
Human thinking isn't all it's prized to be, 3PO. In fact, sometimes it's better not to know what's on someone else's mind.
Han placed his hand over the top of the squarish glass to prevent the four-armed bartender from refilling it. He paid for the drink, tipped the Kodru G generously, and was headed for the exit when Big Bungie's Aqualish lieutenant intercepted him.
Ah, I see you made it off the wheel in one piece, Han said with elaborate disappointment.
Good to see you too, Solo. Boss B thought you might be found here.
Tell Bungie I want to thank him for leaving us behind.
He sends his apologies. Perhaps this will help, Solo. The boss has learned that the human you are asking about, the one called Wreck Dash, has an operation plan for the Ringe.
Han's expression went from anger to wary interest.
What sort of operation?
Unknown, only that it involves the entire Peace Brigade.
When?
Imminently.
The Ringe, you say?
That much is known.
Han pushed his hair from his forehead and loosed a slow exhale.
Okay.
Tell Bungie thanks. Han had to find transport to Bilbringi and nose around for clues as to what Wreck was up to. Leia could probably pull the necessary strings to get him aboard a ship, but he couldn't ask her without coming clean, and he wasn't ready to risk that. Not yet, anyway. But C-3PO could arrange for his passage on a Bilbringi-bound vessel. As per Han's discreetly relayed request, C-3PO rendezvoused with him at the entrance to the Ord Mantell spaceport.
Nothing better than a prompt droid, Han said, smiling.
I must confess, Master Solo, C-3PO responded anxiously, that I feel less than right about this, especially about mimicking Mistress Leia's voice to arrange for your passage.
Come on, 3PO, you've done it before. You did it to fool Grand Admiral Thrawn's forces.
That's not very reassuring, sir. What's more, that was a matter of protecting the princess from assassins. This is a matter of protecting you from... I'm not quite sure what, Master Solo.
I'm not asking you to lie, 3PO, Han said. If Leia doesn't ask you about me, then there's no need for you to say where I've gone.
But surely she will ask about you, sir.
Han considered, then said,
You know... Sometimes people are better off not knowing certain things.
Sir?
Sometimes it's more painful to know the truth than not to know it.
C-3PO paid close attention.
Put that way, it doesn't sound so bad.
Then he made a flustered gesture.
But, Master Solo, sir, about this ship on which you have passage, there's something you should know.
No time, 3PO, Han said. Thanks for everything. You won't regret this.
But, sir, he called out as Han hurried out of the spaceport, it's the Queen of Empire, a jinxed vessel if ever there was one.
Shh.
Sir Walter grimaced as he watched Elan's Ooglith masker envelop and attach itself to her, extruding microscopic hooks and tentacles that inserted themselves into pores, sweat ducts, wrinkles, and folds.
"All finished,"
Elan announced stoically, and Showalter turned again to find her clothed not only in the Yuzhong Vong second skin, but also in the robe he had originally handed her. She looked more human than ever. Verger's disguise amounted to no more than a loose-fitting garment that concealed her feathered torso and reverse-articulated legs. It was hoped that with so many folks displaced from the outer rim, immigration and customs officials were getting used to seeing new species every day. Showalter handed Elan undergarments, a simple dress, a jacket, and shoes.
"Here's your outfit."
"Who am I supposed to be?"
"My wife. We're refugees displaced from a planet called Cernpadal, traveling with our servant."
"That would be me,"
Verger said.
"As ever."
"We'll be met by backup on the ship."
As the pack to the bulkhead's tender pulled into docking position alongside the once magnificent luxury liner, Han suddenly realized what C-3PO had been trying to tell him back on Ord Mantell.
"Of all ships," Han said to himself as the vessel's faded and battle-scarred legend came into view, "the Queen of Empire."
In her heyday, the Queen had rivaled the older Quamar Messenger and the Mon Calamari starliner Quarry Princess, but frequently the target of pirates, a magnet for meteors, and once stranded in hyperspace for 5 days, the Queen had fallen on hard times. It wasn't until he was aboard that he grasped just how far the Queen had fallen. While he and a handful of others actually held tickets, the ship was overwhelmed with keel runners, casualties of war, and refugees previously stranded on Ord Mantell and the Wheel, and now on their way to various colony and core worlds, thanks in large part to Leia's efforts. Han hadn't eaten anything since bar snacks on Ord Mantell, and not surprisingly, he was ravenous. But by the time he arrived at the cafeteria, it had been set upon by near-starving passengers, and only limited quantities of food remained. There wasn't a utensil to be found. It had come down to using claws, pincers, or whatever foraging appendages nature had bestowed. Han was assessing whether any of the grime on his hands might be toxic when he remembered the survival tool Anakin had given him, the one Chewie had made, which, remarkably, after all he'd been through on the Jubilee Wheel, was still clipped to his belt. And sure enough, the tool contained a fork attachment. Closing in on the warming trays, he saw that only one piece of Nerf steak remained, an overdone gristly piece at that, but he wasn't about to pass it up. As he reached forward and speared it, however, a talon-like nail attached to a somewhat velvety five-fingered hand lanced the steak at the same instant. Han whirled and found himself face-to-face with the male Rin, in whose company he had escaped the Wheel. The prehensile-tailed alien was sporting the same vibrantly colored culottes vest and jaunty beret.
"Ha!" the Rin yapped in amused surprise. "I told you I'd see you around."
Han grimaced.
"Around 5 years from now would have been more to my liking."
"Ah, but you can't fight fate, my friend."
"I can try," Han snapped. "What are you doing here, anyway?"
"Why, the same as you, traveling forward."
He cut his large eyes to the thin slab of meat.
"So, who claims the prize?"
"I guess we share it," Han said in a rankled tone. "Providing you eat the half you stuck your fingernail into."
Han transferred the steak to an inexpertly washed plate, and the two of them found opposing seats at a nearby table, among a mixed group of Celestans and Bims.
"Droma,"
the Rin said, extending a hand as he was sitting down.
"Roki Lamu,"
Han told him, reluctantly shaking hands.
"I have to say, Roki, you look a lot better than when I saw you last."
Han scratched at the rectangle of synth flesh Leia had applied to his forehead.
"The marvel of Bacta. Wish I could..."
"Say the same for you," Droma completed.
Han slapped the tabletop and leaned forward angrily.
"You and I need to come to an arrangement. I don't know the trick to how you do it, but from now on, you're going to keep my thoughts to yourself. Understand?"
"Quite a challenge," Droma mused.
"That's your problem."
Han stared at him for a moment.
"Just how do you do it?"
Why, haven't you heard that all Rin are mind readers and fortune tellers?
Droma asked facetiously.
Yeah, and I'm a Jedi Knight.
Droma laughed. Now, that would be a stretch.
Where are the Rin from?
Han asked while Droma was licking his fingers clean.
Originally, I mean.
Droma smoothed the ends of his white mustache. A world in the core, but even we Rin don't know which one.
How did you end up on the Jubilee Wheel?
I was among a caravan of Rin ships that had left the corporate sector for the Lesser Pluriate Cluster when the Yuuzhang Huang pushed into the Ortega system and destroyed Aithor.
You're a professional pilot?
A fair one, Droma said. As well as a scout and all-around spacer.
So, what happened after Aithor?
Our ships were scattered, as were our families. I've been searching for my clanmates ever since, including a sister and several cousins.
Tough, Han said.
Droma nodded. But what about you, Roki? You handle a ship as masterfully as a starfighter pilot, or a successful smuggler. What brings you out here?
Han took a moment to collect his thoughts.
I'm more a mechanic than I am a pilot. Taking time off from normal life to figure some things out.
Above a gibbous Obra sky, Harar's faceted ship hung in the shadow of the most recently arrived of the Yuuzhang Vong's Yorick Coral battleships, under the command of Malik Kar. In the command center of the smaller vessel, Malik Kar, Nom Anur, Harar, Commander Talah, and his chief tactician studied a holographic swirl of star systems, given life by data fed to the war coordinator lodged in Obraskai's mutilated surface, and relayed to the faceted ship by signal Villip.
The auguries are encouraging,
Commander Talah was telling his peer.
Our campaign proceeds apace.
Duly noted, Malik Kar said. And what of the Jedi?
Harar vouchsafed a thin smile.
Their days may be numbered as well. We have taken steps to provide the Jedi with a crisis by infiltrating one of our own among them, Priestess Elan.
We have even gone so far as to provide the New Republic with a minor victory at Ord Mantell to substantiate the peerless value of our operative,
Commander Talah added.
It is our belief that Elan is en route to a meeting with the Jedi even now.
The priest stopped himself when he saw a herald appear at the entry to the command center, bearing a villip in his folded arms. Approaching Nom Anur, the herald stroked the villip's ridge, inducing it to evert. Nom Anur gestured for one of his own dedicated villips to be brought forth, and watched as the transforming villip took on the aspect of one of his Yuuzhang Vong underlings.
Executor,
the subaltern's facsimile began.
A group of your agents, those enlisted in the Peace Brigade, have apparently taken it upon themselves to return something seemingly lost to us.
Nom Anur's eyes grew wide.
Not Elan,
he said in false hope.
She, Executor.
What? Harar said in alarm. What's this?
How is this possible?
Nom Anur asked.
How did the Peace Brigade learn of Elan's feigned defection?
I have not been able to ascertain that, Executor.
This is ludicrous, Harar shouted. How do they plan to retrieve her?
Apparently they have been apprised of the means by which she is to be relocated to Coruscant Eminence.
Nom Anur wore a rancorous expression.
Impossible! Even I had difficulty sorting through the New Republic's subterfuges. Even within the Intelligence Division, the route is a closely guarded secret.
I know only that the Peace Brigade is planning to move against a passenger ship bound for Bilbringi,
the subaltern said.
They have persuaded at least one of their immediate Yuuzhang Vong controllers to assist them, and they have a Dovan Basil in their possession.
We must see to it that they are prevented from interfering.
Harar became angrier as he spoke.
At any cost!
We're husband and wife,
Showalter told the Asgardian officer stationed at the most forward of the Queen of Empire's starboard boarding gates. The stout near-human regarded Vergaer.
Is he with you?
She, Showalter demanded. Our servant. The boarding officer nodded uncertainly, then returned the identity documents and tickets Showalter had provided. Your stateroom is located on Deck 24, berthing space 12. Welcome aboard and safe journey. The stateroom was more spacious than he had expected, with a sitting area of couch, table, and chairs, and four pull-down beds. Ushering the two defectors inside, Showalter checked the passageway before securing the door. Home sweet home, he said. Until tomorrow, at least.
What happens then?
Ilan asked as she sat down on one of the platform beds.
I'll tell you when the time comes.
She shook her head at him.
You still don't trust me, do you?
Nothing personal, he said. Just following procedure.
Showalter set their luggage in a corner and made certain that the door to the adjoining suite was locked. He was about to make himself comfortable when someone knocked at the entry door.
Drawing his blaster from his shoulder holster, he positioned himself alongside the lock jam. What is it?
Cabin service,
a resonant voice said.
We didn't request anything.
Compliments of Captain Scour,
the man in the passageway replied.
He also invites you to be his guests at his table this evening.
That can be arranged.
I'll tell him you said so.
Showalter lowered his weapon and hit the hatch release. A tall, dark-haired, and dangerous-looking human entered, followed by a Rhodian.
I'm Darda, the man announced. This is Capo.
Green, coarse-complected, and a bit hard on the human nose, Capo had a lithe grace and an easygoing air. Catching sight of Ilan and Verger, he drew his partner's attention to them.
Where'd you come aboard? Showalter asked.
Darda pivoted away from Ilan to face him.
Right here at Vortex. We were ahead of you in the boarding line.
Showalter grinned.
Yeah, I noticed you. Is it just you two? Three more are already on board,
Darda supplied,
mingling with the refugees in steerage. They'll probably show themselves at dinner.
Showalter nodded.
Where's your cabin?
Darda nodded his square chin at the passage door to the adjoining suite.
Right next to you.
Convenient, Showalter remarked. Someone at HQ actually did their homework.
He glanced at Capo.
Where do you work out of, Capo?
Birbringi,
the Rhodian said, pressing suction-cupped fingertips together.
Showalter's eyes returned to Darda. You? Lately out of Gamor, but they're pulling me back to Coruscant after this op.
Showalter looked surprised.
Is that right? Who's your new boss?
Darda had his mouth open to respond when another knock sounded at the door. Showalter gestured for silence and raised his blaster once more.
What is it?
Cabin service,
a human voice replied. The three NRI operatives exchanged disconcerted glances. Showalter gestured Darda and Capo into the adjoining suite and motioned for Ilan and Verger to remain still. When the passage door closed behind Capo, Showalter moved to the entrance.
We didn't request anything.
Compliments of Captain Scour. He also invites you to be his guests at his table this evening.
That can be arranged.
I'll tell him you said so.
With an economy of movement, Showalter slid his blaster under a pillow on the couch, arranged two chairs so that their backs were turned to the passage door, and opened the entry door. A muscular human male and a handsome Bothan female entered, introducing themselves as Jody T. and Saiga Brelia. Shrewdly, Showalter maneuvered them into the chairs and asked where they'd come aboard.
We've been aboard since Ord Mantell, the Bothan said after she'd had a pure eyeful of Ilan and Verger.
Is it just the two of you?
Two others were supposed to have come aboard at Anobis,